So today we're on text 37, page 61. Ananda chinmaya rasa pratibhavita vis tabir eva nitarupatiya kalabi goloka eva nivasatya kilatmabhuto govindamari purusham tamaham bhajami. This verse describes Shrinkara Ras, or the conjugal love between Krishna and the gopis, and how the it's a very important verse if one is using verses to establish the transcendental position of Krishna in his pastimes. Sometimes mundane people of this world, when they see the pastimes of Krishna enacted in Vrindavan, they criticize, how is it Krishna is running with the wives of other men? He's taking these coward girls and dancing with them on the banks of the Yamuna and enjoying intimate pastimes with them, and they are the wives of others. So how is it possible? But then this verse is cited, Nija Rupatiya Kalavi, that Nija Rupa means form or body, and Nija means one's own. So Kala means expansion or parts. So the gopis, all the gopis, and everyone in Vrindavan, practically speaking, is simply a part of Krishna. So the analogy Prabhupada uses in the Krishna book is that you can't find fault if some boy is dancing with his shadow. You know, there's a shadow on the ground, and the boy is dancing with the shadow. The full moon is shining, and his body is casting a shadow, and he's dancing with the shadow. Or like the proverbial, there's the story of Cinderella dancing with a broomstick in the kitchen. And so there's no harm in that. So there's no harm in Krishna dancing with the shadows. So the gopis of Vrindavan, although they appear on one level to be married, they're actually the Nija Rupatiya Kalabi. They're the personal expansions of Krishna. The translation, I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord. Residing in his own realm, Goloka Vrindavan with Radha, resembling his own spiritual figure, the embodiment of the ecstatic potency, possessed of 64 artistic activities, in the company of her confidants, Sakis, who are embodiments of the extension of her bodily form, permeated and vitalized by his ever blissful spiritual ras. So basically, Krishna expands into Radharani, and Radharani expands into all the Sakis, and all their hearts are filled with the divine spiritual ras of Shrinkara Ras, or divine love. It's a very long purport, this verse, and somewhat confusing too. Language is rather old-fashioned and technical. We'll read the purport, but then at the end, or interspersed here and there, I can read summary from my notebook, which explains a little more clearly. So beginning on page 62, it's a very important verse. That's why there's such a long purport to it. It establishes the purity of Krishna and his transcendental pastimes. That the pastimes Krishna performs on this planet, on the earth planet, when he brings the spiritual world here, are basically the same as he does in the spiritual world, but there's some differences also. Although the Lord Absolute and his potency are one and the self-same existence, still they exist eternally as separate entities, Radha and Krishna. So that also can be said. The Absolute Truth, despite being one, is potency and potent, eternally presides by his ecstasy potency in two separate forms, Radha and Krishna. So the Supreme Absolute Truth is one and two, or the Supreme Absolute Truth is male and female, or positive and negative, or Shakti and Shaktiman, or energy and energetic, or enjoyer and enjoyed. All these words are used. Basically, that's why someone was asking one class previously about the energies the different energies. Ultimately, this material energy, the spiritual energy, the tatastha shakti, the antaranga shakti, the bahiranga shakti, all these different energies are ultimately one. They're all Krishna. They're all within Krishna, and Krishna's within all of it. They say that material is just a word. When we say material energy, a material world, is just a term or a word to describe the absence of Krishna or the absence of God. Because as soon as God is there in your world, there's no more material, it's spiritual. And as soon as, in other words, as soon as you see everything like that, then everything becomes transformed. For the Mahabhagavat, it says in 11th canto, they see bliss everywhere. They see the whole world is pervaded with ananda, or bliss. Nevertheless, from a pragmatic standpoint, we do see suffering in the world, and disease, and poverty, but never these souls, because they see everywhere, everything's organically and perfectly moving, and they see Krishna everywhere. So for them, the whole world is full of bliss. Although for an intelligent, rational person, he'll see that the whole world is full of misery. Actually, in one sense. Just from an intellectual viewpoint, you can analyze the world and see it's full of misery. And then for one who's drunk or intoxicated in tamagun, he thinks the whole world's full of bliss also. And then for the person who's half intoxicated, he's half rational and half irrational. He thinks that there's some suffering and there's some enjoyment in the world. And therefore he tries to avoid the suffering and increase the and go for the enjoyment. But he's only half mad. At any rate, this is the material world. It's basically a place of suffering. And that, Rupa Goswami explains, the suffering of our own bodies, suffering caused by other bodies and minds, and the sufferings caused by nature. One time, I was studying medicine in college, and in physiology class, they were saying that there's unlimited points on the human body which you can generate pain. But there's only a few points on the human body where you can generate pleasure. Right? This human body has a vast surface area. You take a pin, and you stick a pin anywhere on the body, and it'll be hurting something. You'll get pain. But pleasure you can only get in a few localized places. So the point they were making is that the body itself is a register of pain. It's a vehicle for registering pain. Not really a vehicle for experiencing pleasure. And that's quite significant considering it's a mundane medical school, that they had such understanding of the nature of the human body. There's only a couple holes here and there that give us some pleasure. If you stick food in your ear, that's one of the 9 holes of the body, but you won't taste any, you won't appreciate the sweetness of ice cream or the pungency of, some dal. You won't be able to perceive any taste over there. It's a hole. It's in the body. It's one of the holes in the body. But you won't taste any sweet or sour or salty or pungent or bitter. But you put in this hole and then the tongue is there and you don't have a cold or something, then you can perceive. So the pleasure of eating is reserved for one place. I like that. There's only a few places you can experience. Now, next sentence. The vibhav, or extensions of that rasa, mellow quality, is twofold. Alambanam, the prop, udipan, the stimulation. Also means subject or object. I mean, the alambana has two things. Of these, alambana is twofold. Ashraya, supported, and vishaya, the supporter. Ashraya signifies Radhika herself and the extensions of her own form. And Vishaya means Krishna himself. Krishna is Govinda, the Lord of Gokul. Golok. The gopis are the facsimile Ashraya of that rasa. In other words, they're the reservoir of love and Krishna is the object of that love. With them, Krishna indulges in eternal pastimes in Golok. Of course, this kind of... the way Bhakti Sant Saraswati goes right into this purport, assuming that everyone is well versed in rasa tattva, and If you aren't, then you won't know what he's talking about. Because at the level of Bhava Bhakti, it's called Bhava Bhakti because there's so many bhavas or emotional experiences that one tastes and undergoes and experiences within his body, mind, senses, and his very atma. And they have different names and different category and different characteristics, and are described in the Nectar Devotion by Rupa Goswami with different names like Vibhav, Anubhav, Sanchari Bhav, Sattvic Bhavs, like that. And all these bhavas and feelings of love, transcendental love, when they combine together in relationship with the permanent mellow of ecstasy, or the permanent bhav, which is called sthayi bhav, then one actually tastes what we're always hearing about, bhakti ras. One actually tastes the happiness of loving Krishna, of serving Krishna. So these have been analyzed in different categories. So this particular one is Vibhav. So I just want to read a little introduction to this subject before we go on to the next part of the purport. At the level of Bhava Bhakti, which of course comes after some time, a devotee is blessed by Krishna's Ladini Shakti in the form of his personal Swarup Shakti. Then he can taste Bhakti Ras, the sweet, mellow taste of devotion which arises from a combination of transcendental emotions or bhavas. That's the kind of, at that level, one has the same experience of Rupa Goswami, who writes, well, I don't know if he wrote it. Maybe, yeah, he wrote it. He spoke it in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's also recorded in Padyavali. He said that I'm experiencing such nectar from chanting the holy name and hearing the holy name of Krishna. I wish I had thousands of tongues and thousands of ears to taste that nectar. So he's just from the sound of Krishna's name, you know, he's directly experiencing an enraptured state of consciousness, as if he was having intimate union with the Supreme Lord. His Atma is having divine union with God himself. So because the Atma is Prakriti, or female, so it is in fact a divine union, and he's experiencing it, and it's thrilling his heart with such inconceivable ecstasies that he's hankering for thousands and thousands of tongues to taste that nectar of Krishna's name, and thousands of ears to relish and hear that nectar. And we don't have exactly that experience. We think one tongue is too much and two ears are too much. We've chanted enough. And so that's the difference between Bhava Bhakti and Sadhana Bhakti. So that's Bhakti Ras. So the basis for experiencing Bhakti Ras is one's eternal individual rasa, or relationship with the Supreme Lord, of which, you know, there are five principal ones. So that's called, these are all different bhavas. So bhava means transcendental love, emotions, mellow, Prabhupada translated mellow, or sentiment, sentiment of love, of divine feelings between the Atma and Krishna. So it all starts at the foundation. The foundation is called sthayi, like we say, lilasthan, which is the foundation of the place of Krishna's pastimes. So sthayi bhav is that fixed. It's fixed, like we say in Mayapur, there's stanu, stanu nishringa. The stanu means standing. He's ugra rup, but he's standing on his tiptoes, ready to catch Hiranyakashipu. So he's stanu, he's standing. So sthayi means that the rasa that you stand on, it's your permanent devotional mellow. And that's always there. And sometimes the acharyas compare that to the ocean. The ocean is always there, and sometimes it's placid and calm and peaceful, and sometimes it's whipped into torrents of tidal waves and of cyclone proportion and tremendously destructive winds and like that. And sometimes there's little waves. There's many varieties on the ocean. So the ocean itself is the permanent mellow that's always residing in the heart of the devotee who attains to Bhava Bhakti and Prema Bhakti. It becomes very clear to him. Oh yes, I'm in Sakhi Ras. I'm in Madhurya Ras. I'm in Vatsalya Ras. So then from that foundation or from that ocean, then so many other bhavas and little waves will come, which will create different experiences in the mind and body and heart of the devotee. So when a devotee feels one of these rasas or loving mellows towards Krishna as a continuous and permanent basis within the heart, it is called one sthayi bhav. In other words, your ras. What is your eternal ras, which we were talking about yesterday? That is designated within the heart. Our sthayi bhav is the foundation or permanent individual relationship by which we taste and experience a number of other feelings and emotions which come and go. When our sthayi bhav, or permanent rasa, mixes with these other emotions listed as vibhav, which is mentioned here, anubhav, sattvic bhavs, and sanchari bhavs, which are also called vyavachari bhavs, we can experience bhakti ras and Krishna prema. There are seven secondary rasas. Sometimes you hear, usually most of us had some understanding, there's 12 rasas that were exhibited. They were all seen in the wrestling arena of Kamsa and Mathura when Krishna and Balaram entered there to fight with Chanura Mushtika and that Dhanarjagya arranged by Kamsa. So the five primary ones, or Mukhya Ras, are, as you know, Shantadasya, Sakyavatsali, and Madhurya. But then there's secondary ones which are there, and they're like fear. One is called Bayanaka Ras, Vira Ras, which means heroism, fear. And one is Hasya Ras. Everyone likes that one. Hasya Ras. That's laughter, comedy, humor. Hasya Ras. And then there's comedy. And then there's Vibhatsa, which is ghastliness or some horrible thing like a horror movie or something. Sometimes those movies, the scary movies, people get afraid to look at. I remember when we were a child, my brother took us to one of those movies, scary movies, the monsters and everything. And I was so afraid that I it was raining that day, so I had my raincoat. So I put my raincoat over my head, and then I took the buttonhole, where the hole, so I was looking through the buttonhole. I thought if I just see a little bit of it, it won't be so bad. Then I could go. So there's these ghastly things. So these seven secondary, they're called gona rasas, and they are there in each one of the primary rasas. So there is fear in Madhurya ras, there is ghastliness in Madhurya ras, there is heroism, and there's comedy, and there's laughter. All these different seven secondary rasas are there in Madhurya, and they're also there in Vatsalya. So they have different. These same seven are there as auxiliary or nourishing subsequent or secondary rasas for the main rasa that's in the heart of the devotee. So I have an example here also. For example, sometimes Mother Yashoda, another one of the rasas called Adbhuta ras, which means wonder, amazing, astonishment. Just like in Chaitanya Bhagavat, there's a prediction, not Chaitanya Bhagavat, but in Navadvipa Mahatmyam, Lord Nityananda is taking Jiva Goswami on a tour of Navadvip, and he says, see, Sri Jiva, just see here across the plain, nearby here in Mayapur, near the Janamstan, there will be, very soon in the future, there will be an Adbhuta Mandir. Adbhuta Mandir. Adbhuta Mandir will rise from the plains of Navadvipa or Mayapur, and it will be so beautiful and establish the prem dharma of Nam Sankirtan all around the world will be established from there. So that Adbhuta Mandir was yet to be manifested, but that means an astonishing, amazing Mandir. So Mother Yashoda, she was sometimes, she's in Vatsalya Ras, she has a loving, intimate mood with her child, affectionate mood of nourishment and protection for Gopal. But then sometimes Gopal's naughty and he's a pretty mischievous person. And then he goes to Brahmandagat and he plays with his friends, and then he jokes around and takes some clay over there and puts it in his mouth. He says, look, this is just as good as Mother Yashoda's rasgullas. There's no difference between Mother Yashoda's rasgullas and this clay is mati ladu. And then the boy said, oh, you rascal, you know, your mother went to so much trouble kneading that cheese to make that first class rasgullas, you know. And then, so then some boys ran off to get Mother Yashoda and squeal. Well, we say squeal. Squeal on Krishna. That's an American phrase. Or rat, you know, rat on Krishna. Squeal on Krishna, rat on Krishna means that you tell on him. In other words, when you want to get your big brother in trouble or your little sister, you tell your mother, oh, you know what, Krishnadas is doing? Or, you know, what? Oh, she's in the backyard, you know, she's stealing the cookies out, this and that, and, you know. Like kids do like that. So that comes from Krishna's lila. Also, they wanted to get Krishna in trouble and see Mother Yashoda chase after him and because, you know, it's fun, right? So they went and got Mother Yashoda and said, oh, Mother Yashoda, you don't know. This little Lala Gopal, he's just like nonsense. He's down in Vrindavan and he's eating clay and he's throwing your rasgullas to the monkeys and it's a terrible scene. You know, all your labor is gone for naught. No! And she goes running over there. Then when she looks inside Krishna's mouth to see whether it's a clay ball or a ladu, and she sees all the clay in the universe. She sees all the clay in the whole universe. She sees every planet and every inch of the whole universe. And she sees Vrindavan inside of his mouth. And in Vrindavan she sees Brahmandagad. And she sees Gopal. And she sees Mother Yashoda. And then when she sees all that, she becomes astonished, amazed, overwhelmed, bewildered, adbhutaras. So that adbhutaras rises up within her to as a subsequent or secondary rasa or emotion or feeling of love towards her beloved Krishna and mixes up with her primary rasa of parenthood. So that's one example. So sometimes Yashoda shows fear or wonder, but she always remains fixed in her sthayi bhava or permanent devotional mellow of parenthood. In other words, these secondary rasas come, but it's not like when one is overwhelmed with this adbhuta ras, this rasa, this flavor, this taste of astonishment, that one throws away their sthayi bhava and just becomes like confounded and confused and immobilized, at least impermanently immobilized, into some new position of non-interaction or something. It just lasts for a moment and then it goes away. And she thought when she saw this whole universal form and all these different universe inside Krishna's mouth, she was a little bewildered. Then she thought, oh, I must have a headache or something. What's wrong? I ran down here too fast in the sunshine. Where are my rasgullas? You know, so just for one second she was in this adbhuta ras, but then again she recoiled immediately back to her eternal flavor of love with Krishna, of being his loving mother. So it doesn't disturb the permanent intimacy and sweetness of the primary rasas. So the sthayi bhava is like a king, and all the other bhavas or ecstasies are servants of the king. It's also compared to a rasala. Rasala. Rasala is a type of drink that we never experience, but it's often mentioned in rasa shastras, that when it's talking about different experience, tastes of love, it compares it to rasala. And rasala starts with a base of yogurt. So yogurt is like the sthayi bhava, the main. And then they add different ingredients to that yogurt, like camphor and some, of course, rock candy, misri. And then they put other things. And then they mix that all up and it gives a very nice flavor. Alone, yogurt has a certain flavor and nourishing quality, satisfying quality. But when it's mixed up with camphor and rock candy and some different spices, it becomes more relishable, more palatable. So that's the same thing. Vatsalya bhava is nice, but when you mix it up with all these other things, other different rasas, then it becomes more flavorful. So that's the example that's given, is rasala drink. So this first thing that's in this purport about vibhava is that there's two aspects of Vibhava, Lambana and Vishaya. Lambana and Udipan. So a Lambana has two aspects, which is Vishaya and Ashray. And Ashray, of course, means shelter. Like we say, the Namashraya, the shelter of the holy name, or Ashram. Ashram means to be sheltered in a particular position. And you're sheltered by the laws of that position and the blessings that one gets by upholding that particular position. So for example, if one is in Brahmacharya Ashram, he follows the austerity of Brahmacharya. And by following the austerity of Brahmacharya, he pleases the rishis and demigods. And they are, many of them are still existing, even in India. And so they give blessings to that person to go forward in spiritual life. And not only that, the Lord himself blesses that person because he's set up the four varnas and the four ashramas. So the shelter of love in this vibhav, the reservoir of love or the shelter of love is the gopis. It's like the object, right? Subject and object. And the subject is a vishaya. Like we say, vishaya means sense objects, but vishaya means actually the subject in this case. And the subject of love is Krishna. He's the recipient of their love. So this is one aspect of this vibhava. And the other aspect is called udipana, which means different occurrences and different objects that stimulate the flow of love between the vishaya and the ashray, between Krishna and the gopis. Or the gopis represent the devotion, the devotee. So Krishna is always, there's always one, usually one vishaya, and different personalities are the shelter of love. So Krishna, different aspects of Krishna, they will stimulate love to flow from the ashray to the vishaya, from the object to the subject. That's what is being mentioned. So for example, this udipana is that when Radharani sees a dark cloud, just like the peacocks in Vrindavan, when they see dark clouds come, they start to get a little bit excited. When they see the sky fills with dark clouds, and as soon as there's some rumbling, some thunder, then they get really excited and they start rah, 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 because it's a stimulant that reminds them of Krishna. And when they hear the rumbling of the clouds, they think it's Krishna's murli. So that's an udipan for them, to start singing and dancing in happiness. Oh, Krishna's come, Krishna's come, Krishna's come. Let's go see, let's go see, let's go see. And then they start speaking to each other in a very excited tones of voice and anticipating the darshan of Krishna. And of course they may see, but we don't. But so sometimes they can be fooled because they aren't so intelligent. So when there's clouds, they're already halfway excited. Then if somebody shoots a shotgun to get rid of some pigeons from the building, they think that that shotgun is like cloud, like rumbling of clouds. So they start going, ah, 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 ah. They get kind of excited. Or even you can go sometimes in the forest in the rainy season, and if there's forest, but just say, there's not much forest here, but say you go in the goshala where there's a lot of trees, and there's peacocks roosting up in the treetops. You go over there when it's cloudy and the dark monsoon clouds are there, and you take a mridanga with you. It's go bump, 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 bump with mridanga. You hit the mridanga, and they also think that that's the clouds and that's Krishna's flute, and then they start singing their happy song. So in the same way, when the gopis, when they see the clouds, when they see the monsoon clouds, they think, oh, Ganesham. Oh, Ganesham. Soon we'll see you, Ganesham. And they see Krishna's smile in the clouds, and they see Krishna's form in the clouds, and that stimulates their sthayi bhav, their permanent madhurya of feelings. So it's called udipana. It's a stimulus. It's something like you have the ocean, and then if there's an earthquake, like we read on a bulletin board here, they have all these little things here on the Gurukul. It says, most earthquakes happen in the ocean, right? There's all these little facts and figures. So there's earthquakes, but most of them are in the ocean, so we don't experience the destructive quality of knocking down buildings and whatnot. So when there's an earthquake in an ocean, then the reaction of the earthquake, there's a big wave. There's big waves come up in the ocean, big tidal waves. And so they don't affect the mainland, but if you happen to be a little islander out there in some Polynesian island, you may get sent for a loop. I mean, you know, you might get doused and drowned pretty well. But so this earthquake is the Uripan that stimulates the ocean to create, and then the response is this big wave. So the Uripan is Krishna's flute is one of the main ones. They see Krishna's flute or they hear Krishna's flute, and just by hearing the flute, then that's like an earthquake in the heart of the gopis. So they are not the gopis, but the cowherd boys, the cows, all the residents of Vrindavan, the primary Uripana is Krishna's flute. And that creates, it starts moving the ocean of love in their hearts in different ways. And then different subsequent or different feelings and ecstasies follow that initial movement. That's why it's called Vibhav and then Anubhav. So the Anubhav, I'm just going to summarize these different bhavas and go on. So Anubhava is the next thing that happens. It's called subsequent ecstasy or illuminating symptoms. These are ecstasies and emotional transformations which follow this Vibhav. So you have an Alambana, this Alambana means you have this, you have Krishna and his devotee, and then there's something to stimulate, and they have love, they have a loving relationship between each other, say Madhurya Ras or Vatsalya Ras, and then there's something to stimulate that. So that something can be the flute, or be something in nature, or just like there was an example in Gaur Leela, that Mukunda Datta, he was a doctor, Mukunda Das, he was a physician in the court of the Muslim king 500 years ago. And the king, when he was sitting there in the dais, they came out with a peacock fan to fan the king, his servants. And when Mukunda saw those peacock feathers, he immediately thought of Shamsundar with his mukut, with his peacock feather crown. And he saw that peacock feather and immediately thrilled him with the remembrance of his Ishtadev, of Govindaji. And then it just stimulated his, you know, that was the Uripana, which is part of Vibhav. Seeing that peacock feather was Uripana or Uripan. And then that erupted, it caused the volcano of love within him, or the ocean of love within him to get agitated or to erupt. And it erupted, and then after that, there were other things that followed. One of them was, you know, perspiration, sweating, and then pralaya. He went unconscious. So this is an example of this Anubhav. Anubhav means to follow. Bhavas which follow. Emotions or ecstasies which follow the main one. So, upon seeing Krishna, loving symptoms manifest within the body, and these are called Anubhavas. The Sthayibhav within the heart of the devotee is agitated, and that agitation produces bodily transformations. These are mentioned in the Nectar Devotion, such as singing, dancing, yawning, foaming at the mouth. These are Anubhavas. Just like it's explained, when you understand, when one understands the science of Ras, I'll mention this later, they can much more appreciate when they read the Srimad Bhagavatam pastimes described of Krishna, when it's described that the demigoddesses flying in the airplane, when they saw Krishna's Rasa dance, their dresses loosened, and their hair loosened, and their dresses loosened, or the knots of their dresses became untied. Well, these are actually different Anubhavas that occur, that when you just see some description and you see some phrases and something happening, but you don't understand what the underlying cause or the sequence of it all. And when you understand the science of rasa, how things happen in a sequential way in relation to Krishna, it's much more relishable and understandable how the devotees are experiencing rasa. That's why we say someone is a rasika. It's not just that a person walks around with, you know, glassy eyes or something, you know, oh yeah, Krishna, Krishna. That the rasika is actually a scientist. He knows the science. Rupa Goswami was a rasika Vaishnava, and so was Das Goswami and all the acharyas. And they were learned in the science. And some people say, oh, I don't want to study, I just want to love Krishna. You know, like some people say like that, like it sounds like Christian, you know, fanatics, you know, Hare Krishna fanatics. But you never love Krishna because Krishna is not so cheap that you can just buy him by your, you know, your emotional outburst. I want to love Krishna. You want to love Krishna, but you're so lazy that you don't want to learn anything about him. If you want to love someone, you want to know everything about them, every aspect of them. You want to know about and understand what they like and what they don't like. You know how they, what makes them happy and what makes them unhappy. So that requires some learning, some education. So one who's actually a lover of Krishna, he'll be mad. He'll be actually very mad to learn everything about Krishna and the relationships. That's what it means when we say one has to follow in the footsteps of Resident Vrindavan. It means that we have to understand what are their bhavas, what are their moods, and what is the science of rasa, and how do we recognize it? So first we study it, and not that this is a course in that, but first we study it, then we understand it to some extent, then it's called Shravanadas, we hear about it. But if you hear about Krishna's pastimes without any preliminary understanding or knowledge, it has very slow and little effect on transforming the consciousness. That's why Shukadeva Goswami explains in the 33rd chapter of 10th canto, verse 39, Vakriditam Vrajavadu Bir. He says that if one hears this pastime of Krishna with the gopis, it will, first thing that happens, it para bhakti will enter into the heart. And even if a person is kamam ridrogam, even if one is suffering from the heart disease of lust, in other words, even if you're a lusty material man or woman, if you hear the pastimes of Krishna's rasa dance, that bhakti, that para bhakti that's contained in that harikata will enter your heart through your ears and eyes by reading and hearing about it, and that will create that bhakti, and that bhakti, that pure bhakti will flush out and cleanse out all that lust. But there's a conditional requirement there. It's not that you just sit down on your hammock, you know, in your backyard, swinging under the oak trees, you know, a hammock goes like this in the between the trees, you know. And you read the Krishna book, and then you're going to have this phenomenon happen, or have this experience. You won't have it happen. But if you're educated and understand something about Rasa Tattva, that's why Rupa Goswami went to all the trouble to write Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. That was the first book that Prabhupada gave ISKCON. 1969, it was translated, it was published in 1970. It was the first three books in ISKCON, the Bhagavatam he brought from India. And then there was, the first book was Easy Journey to Other Planets, he bought from India also. Then Isopanishad, Krishna Book, and Nectar Devotion, and Teachings of Lord Chaitanya. Those are the first and only books for the first 5 years of ISKCON. Anybody who was in ISKCON, those are all the books they had to read. Now we have so many books, and we don't read any of them. What to speak of these first five? Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, Ramananda Sambhag, which is the whole analysis of bhakti and from the point of Varnashram, Karma Samarpanam, Karma Mishra, Gyan Mishra, Varnashram Dharma, and all the way to Prem Vilas, Prem Vivarta. So it's a very high discussion. Prabhupada gave that in 1970, teaching Lord Chaitanya. So this knowledge, if we understand these things, then when we read this Krishna book and these intimate pastimes of Radha and Krishna, which are given to us by Prabhupada, they'll have an extraordinary effect to transform our heart and conscience. Otherwise, we don't understand anything that's going on. We just read, what is it? It just looks like some ordinary boy and girl. So these are anubhavas, singing, dancing, yawning, foaming at the mouth. It's like, for example, I'll show you an example of this vibhav and anubhav. So, just in a mundane, it even happens in mundane experiences. The boy and girlfriend, right? This is like Madhurya. He's been away for a week or something. He hasn't been around. So he comes back and he meets the girlfriend. So when they see each other, the vibhav, the first beginning of the agitation or the movement of the rasa is called vibhav. They already have a relationship of, you know, say it's husband or wife. That's a little more respectable. It's husband and wife, and the husband's been away on business, so they already have a conjugal relationship between each other. So now, that's there, that's their permanent relationship, conjugal relationship, husband and wife. Husband's away on business, and wife is waiting home patiently and missing him, and he's missing her, it's natural. So then he comes home, and he comes into the house. So then he's with a friend or something, a business partner. So then it's a little bit, so they can't have the same kind of exchange that they might have had if they're just alone. So what happens is that the vibhav is they see each other. There's object of love, the vishai, and the lambana. There's the husband and the wife. Then the udipan is just seeing each other. That's a stimulant for their love. They feel, oh, there's my husband, there's my wife. Now, an anubhav, a response to that, when the wife sees a husband, that vibhav is the initial mover, the initial mover of the love within the heart, the primary love, which is conjugal. Now, the thing that follows that, the next emotion that follows that, is she's feeling, oh, I want to embrace my husband, but he's with his boss. He just brought his boss home and introduced me to his boss, and it's a little, her feeling is that I want to embrace. So she'll express that feeling. She may go like this. She'll put her arms like this, and she's, you know, dressed with sweater or whatever. She puts her arms above her head and she stretches. Oh, so I'm so happy to see you or whatever, you know, whatever. And so she'll stretch like this. I mean, stretching, she's actually indicating by her body language that I really want to embrace you. I really want to give you a loving embrace, and her bhavas are moving her and transforming her body to make that expression. So that communicate. So then the husband, who knows the intricacies of or the dynamics of loving exchanges, he'll understand that. So then when his eyes, he'll communicate, well, not now, later, or, you know, what can I do? You know, I want to embrace you also. So he'll communicate that through his eyes. I want to embrace you also, but, you know, my boss is here, and it's just the moment doesn't permit the exchange. So this goes. These so the same thing goes on in Krishna's pastimes. The gopis look like the sidelong glance like this, or they stretch like this, or do like that. All these are different bhavas and anubhavas. And when one understands this, he reads, then he appreciates how expert are the writers of Rasika literature, Rupa Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami, Vishwanath Chakravarti, how they know this science so well, and they weave all these things in a beautiful tapestry, a beautiful tapestry full of bhavas and rasas, they weave into the description of Krishna's pastimes. So that those that are appreciators, or you can say rasikas, of real lovers of Krishna, and they can relish and enjoy and derive great benefit from hearing the pastimes of Krishna. So that's what it means to taste Hari Katha. That we have the same thing in our own material world. That some people, they like music. They say, oh yeah, I like music. And some people go to college and they study all kinds of music theory, music appreciation, and all different kinds of courses. So when they sit down and hear a concert, they really relish. And they're with their friend, and they're just like, wow, you know, and they're just like, their hair is standing on end, and they're having all the, and their friend's there, what's wrong with you? Don't you appreciate, you know, what you just realize what they just did? I mean, this, you know, the fight, you know, the wind instruments overlapped this one, and that one came underneath with the, you know, undertone, and this, you know, and these trills and all these. He said, what are you talking about? I don't understand anything. It just sounds like bop, bop, boom, boom, bum, bum, boom, boom, bum, bum, boom, boom. You know, he said, oh, you're stupid. You can't appreciate, you know. Or it's like fine art. If someone's an artist or something, and you take them to an art gallery and say, what do you, look at that painting. They go, huh? It looks like some red and some yellow. You know, no, you understand the composition, the design, the, you know, the texture, the motion, the movements, the bhava, you know, the, huh? It just looks like, it's oil painting, isn't it? No, you stupid, it's watercolor. Oh, I'm sorry, I thought it was oil painting. He's like, the guy has like zero appreciation, you know? So it's like taking a, you know, a monkey into the art museum and having, you know, so we're reading Krishna's Rasa, you know, this is Rasa, we call Rasa Shastra. What does that mean, Rasa Shastra? Rasa means Sara. You take the syllables Ra and Sa, and you take them, and you reverse Ra and Sa, becomes Sa and Ra. And Sara means the essence of all essences, the quintessence of taste, the highest experience of divine ecstasy. That's what Rasa literature is all about. But if you have no understanding and no education, then you get about half a percent of what's going on. Just like the Prabhupada tells a story that there was one person, he was giving Bhagavad Saptaha. Such a funny story. And during the Bhagavad Saptaha, he got to the 10th canto. And he spent some days in the 10th canto. And he was talking about, and he was kind of the archetypal Indian guru. He had long beard, you know, long beard, quite handsome figure. And nice cloth, long hair, and long beard. So he was speaking, and he got to the 10th canto, and he was starting glorifying the gopis, and the Radharani, and this Radharani, that Radharani, Radharani. So there was one lady in the audience, and she was like, you know, every time when he was talking about Radharani, she was... She was like, you know, going crying, and she was really crying and having an incredible experience. And he was giving the class, and he was noticing this lady, and said, "Oh, she's really relishing this Hari Katha of Radharani's glories and Brahmar Gita and Radharani's feelings, you know, of madness and separation from Krishna when he went to Mathura and all these things." So then, after the pot was finished, the Bhagavad pot, he went up to her and he said, "Excuse me, I see you were appreciating very much my Bhagavad Katha. I'm also appreciating that you appreciate it. You know, it was inspiring to me. You must be a great devotee of Radharani. I could see. Is it? How you felt like this? You know, my talk was so good. No, the thing is, it's not so much like that. I mean, you know, I'm a devotee of Krishna and everything. But see, I had one pet goat. I had one pet goat, and you know, I had a little beard, little goatee like yours, you know, I had a little beard like yours, and you know, hang down. And she died last week, and her name was Radha. And every time you started talking, I just started crying and remembering my pet goat. Jai Jai Shri Radhe. So the idea, this story Prabhupada told. So the idea is that, you know, this person didn't have any education or any knowledge of Rasa Shastra, or Rasa Tattva, the truth of Rasa. They were just crying for some completely other reason. And so when we approach Krishna's Rasa pastimes, Madhurya Ras, Braja Ras, if we have some knowledge of these things, it will be, it will benefit us tremendously. So now that's anubhavas, that they produce these different transformations. Stretching, yawning, singing, dancing, foaming at the mouth, rolling on the ground. So then there's sattvic bhavas, which are described in chapter 28 of Nectar Devotion. They're called sattvic vikars, ashta sattvic bhavas. There are 8 different transformations. And these again are some other different transformations that happen in the body. Romancha kampa shutaranga bhajo. Vande Guru Sri Charanaravindam. So we describe the very advanced spiritual master, that he's engaged in the worship of the Vigraha. He's worshiping Radha and Krishna, his Ishtadeva, within his heart, and maybe externally also. And in the course of his worship of the Lord, he's engaged in the Shringhar, dressing the Lord, and doing in his Nitya Sarup, doing his eternal service to the Lord, dressing them and bathing them and decorating them. And then in the course of when he's absorbing himself in his various services, but Mahaprabhu means that he's that he engages in the kirtan of Mahaprabhu, Mahaprabhu kirtan. And when he's tasting that bhakti ras, that prem ras and the sankirtan, he has these different transformations, romancha, kampa, ashru, that these are sattvic bhavs, transformations of the body. Some tears may come and the hair may stand on end, or bumps all over the body. We say goosebumps or thrill bumps. And these are sattvic bhavs. That's when these are eight transformations of the physical body. When the sthaya bhava is excited and love and moves the different elements of the body. Tears, choking, sweating, hair standing and shaking, trembling. There's a very long discussion. We'll go into some other time, but that is just a summary. So the anubhavas are bhavas or emotions or transformations of the body that follow the vibhav. All these kind of go like, just like when you press one button or something, you press a button on your television, well, so many things happen. You have a remote control, you go like this, well, you hit that button and then that sends a signal to here and then that goes to here and there and there, and so many things happen, all of a sudden there it is, your television screen. So these bhavas, they're all just kind of going like dominoes. They all just have, all kind of go at once. So many things will happen. You'll be stretching and yawning and crying. So there'll be vibhav. Always there's sthaibhav. That has to be there. A permanent relish, love. And always there's vibhav. And then there's different anubhavs will come. And then sometimes, not always, sometimes then sattvic bhavs come. Sattvic bhavs, when the ecstasy increases, the love and ecstasy increases and moves even more, and it starts to move so much, it moves throughout the body and combines with the different elements of the body. So that when the sthaya bhava is stimulated by a particular loving arrangement between Krishna and his devotees, then it contacts air. When it contacts the air of the body, because the body is made of air and water and all these things. So when that actual transcendental emotion mixes up with this material element of the air of the body, then it creates, it causes trembling. You know, trembling, shaking. So that's one of the eight symptoms, is trembling and ecstasy. So then when that sthaya bhava moves and it contacts the water of the body, it creates tears. And so much, it's so much force behind that sattvic bhava, or that loving ecstasy, that when Lord Chaitanya was crying, the tears would shoot out of his eye like a syringe, like a syringe, but a big syringe, like a pitchkari we use for holy. A little syringe you put in some injection in your arm, but a big syringe you squirt colors on people, holy, right? You ever had experience? Little kids, they have, they fill up, they go like this, like it's like a hand pump for a bicycle, and they pull it up with liquid and it's called pitchkari. In Sanskrit, pitchkari. So Radha and Krishna, the gopis, they play on that like that in Gaur Purnim. It's called Holi Purnim. And they throw colors in each other. So the Lord Chaitanya, when he was dancing at Rath Yatra, he was feeling such divine ecstasy in front of Brajendranandan, Krishna, Lord Jagannath, that he was feeling such sattvic bhavs and anubhavs and vibhavs and in his mahabhav, that the tears were shooting out and drenching the devotees that were dancing with him. So when you go to Rath Yatra nowadays, there's these guys, these Bharat Seva Trust or Seva Ashram, or all these bunch of young kids, they go around with fire extinguishers. It's like a big can on their back, and they put water inside, and they add some pressure, air pressure. Then they have a little hose, and then they open the valve, and it shoots out water. So it's very hot during Rath Yatra. I'm talking about Jagannath Puri, the original Rath Yatra. It was very hot that day, usually, very humid. So they go around with this, and they're shooting this water in everyone. And everyone's going, me, me. So when Lord Chaitanya was dancing at Rath Yatra, it was like that automatically. There was no can, no people going around with little cans. He was just like this, and everybody was just going near him like this, and huge shower. Prem Ashu was showering down everyone's heart. So tomorrow we'll discuss some more about this verse.